right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 12th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 58 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. I think it's going to get nice again for the next few days. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show DARPA, NASA, Billionaires, Mars, and, quote, saving, unquote, humanity. And, yeah, I think we have constructed quite the picture over the last week how this new push for the human race to become multi-planetary species, I've been hearing that time and time again over the last few months, is really a push to try to convince the gullible public to get off this rock that's full of pestilence and war. Look at how miserable it is. Remember, Elon Musk said, come on, anyone who wants to go to Mars has to be prepared to die. But all you dopamine junkies out there, you're going to do something for futuring your progeny not only out into the reaches of the solar system, but you could potentially be helping to save the human race. Step right up. Help us start going to the stars and profiting. And I don't know if Elon really might profit directly, but there's always indirect profit. Step right up and help us start exploiting resources throughout the solar system. And that's where this is all headed. We found that there has been approved mining for heavenly bodies. The first one, of course, was the moon, and they have already talked about 2017 being the year that we are going to launch a mining mission to the moon, but they have already had satellites that have been orbiting Mars and mapping the entire geological, mineral, elemental makeup of the planet to determine what rare earth minerals are up there. And guys, there's all kinds of great raw materials as well as rare earth minerals on both the moon and Mars for them to be able to make bazillions of dollars. You know, let's add to that, now we're talking about mining asteroids. That's something that they had already tried, I think it was last year, where they landed a rocket on an asteroid. And they were also messing around with how to direct them. It was all in the name of asteroids, killer asteroids appearing and coming down to kill humans on Earth. They had a big meeting. I don't know if it was congressional. I know that there were a lot of the elected officials were at that meeting about what to do in case killer asteroid came. And, you know, of course, for one brief moment, I thought, whew, you know, nobody is actually watching. And, I mean, they used to be. Who knows what's going on now? Back in 2011, Obama started to shut down a lot of our capabilities to see what was coming at us. And one was a near-Earth object orbiting telescope that lived down in Antarctica. And honestly, I don't think it got shut down. And they may have even said that they got that back up. But at the time, he was on this killing mission. You know, you had this rogue planet study going on, rogue heavenly body monitoring going on. You had the space shuttle. Obama shut it all down. You also had the WISE telescope that was mapping the entire solar system in high resolution. And I don't know if they fired that back up either, but they've been slowly releasing these magnificent, like beyond comprehension, high definition photographs of our solar system. And, you know, it's got to make you wonder when you have the peace president coming out shutting down different space programs here and there. Wink, wink, wink. Then goes and picks up his Peace Prize in Norway that one fine day. And that same very same day, that morning at sunrise, we see this blue vortex in the sky. Do you guys remember that? The Norway spiral? Gotta tell you, a lot of people don't know about that Norway spiral. And if you don't know about that Norway spiral, just go to YouTube and search Norway spiral. That Norway spiral happened the day Obama received his Peace Prize in Norway. And it was right over Norway. And when I first saw that, I thought to myself, this has got to be a Photoshop. I saw a photograph first before I saw the live video. There was no possible way that what I was looking at was actually a real thing in the sky. Until all these different pictures and videos started appearing from thousands of people who had been out. I don't know if they were awaiting the arrival of Obama or what they were doing. There were lots and lots of people out, and I'm pretty sure it had to be. And nobody panicked, which was interesting, because I think I would have freaked out if I would have saw like some sort of Doctor Who vortex in the sky glowing in electric blue. But that's just me. But what's even odder than that? If you remember, right after that happened, they come out and said, oh, yeah, it was a failed Russian rocket. And Russia came out and said, what rocket? What are you talking about? And not even 24 hours later, Russia comes out officially and goes, oh, yes, that rocket, yep. Our rocket booster failed, and it went out of control. And please don't panic, people, because that's what you saw in the sky. Now, it wasn't a rocket. I can tell you, even though I'm not a rocket scientist, I know some rocket scientists. No, I mean, I do, but... it was no rocket. You know, if you have a rocket that's going out of control and you have an engine that went bad, just anyone who knows any basic physics or has worked with any basic machinery knows that when something goes out of control, it is not going to make perfect concentric circles, okay? Now, if you watch this video, that video, the Norway spiral video, one of many, many, or even look at pictures, you're going to see that, I mean, it looks so perfect that you think it's Photoshopped. There's no wavering. There's no equipment failure that I can see in that picture. As an engineer, if you ask me for my diagnoses, my first thing would not be rocket failure spinning out of control. But the second thing that's interesting is when this thing was starting to disappear, you would imagine, just like most things in this physical universe, if it started from down below, which it appears to have, and worked its way up, well then, wherever the source is, when the source is cut off, like at some sort of ground laser or something, which is, you know, as I put on my science hat, it's kind of what it might look like, it would end from the source, which would be at the ground, and work its way up. Well, this doesn't. When this starts to, I don't know, the best way I can describe it is disintegrate, is the center of the spiral turns into this black void that then almost seems to evaporate from center outward. And it's gone. Now, guys, I don't know about you. Honestly, I have no idea what that was. There have been lots of speculations about it being some sort of Project Blue Beam or whatever, and it's possible. You know, I wanted to maybe get to some space weaponry, and Project Blue Beam was something that has been fabled for a very long time to be able to beam down real-time HD images from space, like holograms, make people think they see Jesus or aliens, and use it as a control mechanism to be able to sway the populace on Earth. Von Braun warned about weaponization of space, and it's been postulated that something like that could be very possible. I have not. Now, I'm going to tell you honestly right now, I typically don't talk about like things that are out there, woo, but I still, technologically, I think it is definitely possible, but I have not seen any documentation, any type of RFP or anything of that nature that would make me hang my hat on that. Okay, just a potential. But here's something else that's interesting. When I was digging into that Norway spiral, that, like I said, a lot of people, if you ask if they ever saw it or if they know what it is, they've never even heard of it before because it did not make mainstream news. But if you go back and dig in, one of the other things I was following back at that time, and it must have been late 2000, I don't know if it was Obama's first or second, I think it must have been his first foray in office. One of the things that I was following at that time, so maybe 2008, 2009, was the Large Hadron Collider firing up at CERN. That was just the very beginning. That was when it all just started. And every single time they fired up that Large Hadron Collider, they were going to create an explosion that was 99.99% as big as the Big Bang. And, I don't know, they have one experiment and some explosions. Then a couple days later, they do another and another and another. And every single time they do one of those explosions, it is the next record-breaking, most massive explosion ever seen by humanity. 99.99999% the energy of the Big Bang. Now, we talked about this before. What lunacy would you be taking something that potentially was like the beginnings of, and let's not even get into where the solar system came from, because that's a whole nother ball of wax, whether it's even real or a simulation. I don't know if you saw that there are some rich billionaires that have actually contracted some scientists now to prove once and for all whether or not we are actually in a simulation. But let's not go there. We just go to the science of the explosion that would be required for the Big Bang. Hey, I don't want anywhere near that. And the fact that they are working on something like that on Earth without anybody's vote, again, just like all this other stuff that they're doing, mad science gone mad, letting microbes out that eat things, CRISPRing humans. They never got my vote for that. But hey, it's all in the name of science. But I guess one other thing. So while I was discussing this with a friend at one point in the not too distant past, one of the things I was thinking about that makes me really wonder now about this Norway spiral, and I don't even know how we got here, but it's okay, we'll transition off in a minute, was that if the president was going there that day, which he was, to get his peace prize, which he didn't deserve, because at that point he'd just gotten into office and he didn't do anything, and right after that he waged war on all the world, so they should have taken it back. Shouldn't there have been, even if it was a rocket from Russia, like they tried to make us believe, shouldn't there have been some concern for the president's safety going to Norway? Shouldn't they have been concerned that maybe there were parts falling out of the sky still, or maybe there was some sort of attack coming from somewhere for some strange thing in the sky? I don't know, guys. It just seemed kind of odd to me that there is this, I mean, I'm almost 50. I paid attention to space my whole life, and I've seen full-out northern lights with purples and greens and pinks in them. I remember when I was a kid, I freaked out. I was crying. It was the scariest thing I'd ever seen because I didn't know what it was. But, I mean, I've watched the sky my whole life. I've seen the Milky Way and all kinds of great clear nights. I've seen some strange things, too, in my life. I have never in my life, ever, anywhere, ever seen a glowing electric blue perfectly concentric circles within a vortex all evenly spaced, that then evaporate into a black hole in the sky. From a rocket or not, or from anything. So, I don't know. I call bullshit on all that, but the reason why I brought that up is because Obama and CERN and space all are coming together again, and it just seems so fitting. I was thinking back to that very day this morning going, huh, how interesting. So, yesterday we talked a lot about the billionaires and the big corporations that are all now involved in colonizing our solar system, reaching out to take a look at Alpha Centauri, saving humanity and putting men on Mars, going and mining the moon to exploit her resources. Congress approving $19.5 billion to be able to support this initiative. And then we see, and this was yesterday, National Geographic announces this new global event series. The next chapter in our human destiny is to go to Mars. They're really pushing it. And they got all these real scientists that are going to come and talk and do this like little mini documentary, 2033, The First People on Mars. They even got a little website. So you can set up your profile. You can even sign up and see if you got what it takes. Talked about that reality TV show that they had discussed at first. And I don't know if that is still on or not. But they got tons and tons of applications when they first announced it. They said it was a one-way trip. It's going to be reality TV all the way. We're going to put men on Mars. We're going to film it all. I don't know if you'd want to watch that. It makes me start thinking about all kinds of sci-fi horror movies. But it was a real thing, and there was a lot of interest. They even had, do you guys remember there was a job posting a while back? They were looking for space garbage men because there's so much pollution. I think we actually heard Bruce Gagnon talk a little bit about that. I was surprised to find out that even like a screw off of a former satellite or some sort of space junk that's up there, if a screw even hit a space station, it would put a hole in it. I didn't realize that. Even a chip of paint, he said. So we got the space junk orbiting everywhere that we got to track and make sure that any spacecraft that we put into space doesn't have a collision with that space junk. Well, if we've ever seen a junkyard, that's what our embarrassing outer atmosphere of the planet looks like. It's very, very disturbing what we've done to this planet. And that's what I said. So now we're going to go plague more planets in the solar system and expose them to our polluting and cancerous ways. So Scientific American also got on board. We saw the DARPA lady back in 2015 talk about not only using synthetic biology to terraform Mars, but also how, don't worry, we're not going to screw up Mars. We're going to test it here in all these uninhabitable places that we've created on Earth. We're going to use little microbes and things to eat up pollution and fix it all up. And we'll get all the kinks worked out before we get there. Well, Scientific American then comes out. So you want to terraform Mars. SpaceX vision for a multi-planet species prompts us to think how to make the planet more habitable. And we discovered a whole bunch of different ways that they've been talking about releasing some of the frozen water that they have found at the poles on Mars into the atmosphere and to start to heat it up. So they can start to create some oxygen and something that's maybe a little bit closer to the Earth's environment. The problem is that some of the ways that they've been talking about doing it, we discovered yesterday, like thermal nuclear explosions above the poles. And I'd even seen another story that one of the ways that they're proposing that, of course, we're going to power these new off-world civilizations are going to be, of course, nuclear power. Hey, what? How? How retarded are we as a species? Why would we take nuclear power, at least in its present form, polluting and all, and dangerous to another planet and start setting up nuclear reactors? And I mean, don't even think about launching the nuclear material on a rocket into space and let's have a Challenger moment. I mean, did you think about that? There was one of the, I don't remember which mission it was. Maybe Galileo. It was one of them. It was going to be a long distance one. And they had talked about putting that up with plutonium or something in it as the power source. And I think they did that too. And there were a lot of protests at the time about, oh my God, if this thing explodes in the atmosphere, it's going to blanket the entire planet in unspent nuclear fuel from the upper atmosphere. They didn't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care what you say, okay? It's not up to us. So anyway, yes. So thermonuclear explosions above the poles. Giant mirrors that focus power onto the polar regions to melt some of the ice. That's another one. And I personally think maybe the giant mirrors would be a good one. Even maybe some space lasers or something. Why not? This third one was kind of a bad idea. Let's dump some ammonia into the atmosphere, make it a greenhouse gas. Like, how dumb. Or let's drop some comets. Let's pump CFCs into the atmosphere or spray paint the Martian surface with geoengineering. Yeah, well, all sounds like really dumb ideas. So, as we have all these big boys now all jumping into the picture, saying we're gonna go to Mars, I see a couple more interesting things. First of all, there was a story when they first started talking about that Mars mission with the reality TV show. One of the things that they said there was that, well, it's going to be a one-way trip. The pressure is much different on Mars. And if you go there and you habitate for a while, it's going to compress all your cells. And there will be no way that you'll be able to come back. It'll be like getting the bends. They don't think you're going to make it. If you try to come back to Earth's pressure. So it's going to be a one-way trip. Well, then I heard a couple different things in some of Musk's stories, and there have been so many of them. I mean, I probably had 20 stories at one point lined up here that I kind of scrapped some of them just because it's so repetitive. But there have been all these different facets now. I mean, they're really, really, really dedicating time, effort, and brain power to this project. And they were trying to say that, well, if you go to Mars, it's not going to be a one-way trip. We'll be able to go back and forth and travel between. And I was like, all right, I don't know where that research came from, because as far as I know, since the last story you wrote and since they first started talking about that reality TV show called Mars, I don't think we've sent people there and brought them back yet to know for sure. So I'm not sure how they're saying that, but they were trying to convince people that if you went, yeah, it might not be one way. Well, I see the story that came out yesterday. Mars-bound astronauts risk long-term brain damage and chronic dementia. Well, that's even better than being prepared to die. Let's just go for long-term brain disease. This is the subtopic on this is, will they even remember? When it comes to a planned mission to Mars, we have been so preoccupied with how to ferry humans 225 million kilometers through the solar system that we might be missing a very serious problem. Are we sending astronauts to the red planet to have their brains fried? Well, maybe. The new study based on mice, so did they send little mice to Mars? I hope not, has found that the amount of cosmic rays expected to bombard astronauts during this extended trip could lead to severe cognitive side effects that will stick around long after they return to Earth. So they're even talking about returning people to Earth, which is weird, including memory loss, anxiety, and chronic dementia. This study follows similar research published last year that suggested that the damage from galactic cosmic rays, the GCR particles, with immensely high energy radiation that travel through space at nearly the speed of light, can damage the brain. But they only thought in the short term. Now researchers have evidence to suggest that even 6 months after returning from an extended space flight, astronauts could still be experiencing significant levels of brain inflammation and neuron damage. Well, don't worry about it because, hey, DARPA is also working on all kinds of brain research. They got little brain nanobots they've been playing around with, so I'm sure at some point in the future they'll be able to take care of that. But at least for now, brain inflammation and neuron damage is added to the list of going to Mars. This is not positive news for astronauts deployed on a 2 to 3 year-round trip, says one of the team. Exposure to these particles can lead to a range of potential central nervous system complications that can occur and persist long after the actual space travel, such as various performance decrements, memory deficits, anxiety, depression, and impaired decision-making. Many of these adverse consequences to cognition may continue and progress throughout life. So just to put the galactic cosmic rays into perspective, they are such a huge problem for long-term spaceflight because they can easily penetrate the hull of a spaceship. So imagine what they can do to a person's brain while they're penetrating it nonstop for weeks or years on end. Astronauts in the International Space Station are protected from what? Come on, guys, we learned all about this at the beginning of Space Week last week. Why did I tell you that the guys in the space station really aren't in quote-unquote outer space? Where? Yes, the Earth's magnetosphere protects them from the potentially dangerous cosmic rays. They are within that magnetosphere border. The scientists and their team tested the effects of cosmic radiation on mice that have been exposed to low doses of cosmic radiation at the NASA Space Radiation Laboratory in New York. Who knew we had one of those? I didn't. They were then given several behavioral tasks to complete 12 and 24 weeks after their irradiation period. And they found that mice progressively displayed poor performance on tasks designed to test learning and memory in humans, and even appeared to affect the animals' fear of extinction, which was a decline in the conditioned fear response caused by brain suppressive negative or stressful associations or memories. So guys, this is even that. We were talking about this way back when with a self-driving car and not being able to control whether or not you go into the brick wall or drive into the sidewalk full of people and hope they get out of your way. Self-preservation. That self-preservation that every living creature on this planet has, it even appears to decline your caring about whether or not you get snuffed out. Well, that's very interesting. Researchers also suggested that the decline in fear extinction is what led to the elevated anxiety recorded in the mice. A decline in fear extinction. These new data reveal additional detrimental effects related to fear extinction and anxiety, where charged particles irradiation compromises the ability to dissociate adverse events and outcomes. Now, what does that mean? How am I reading this? Decline in fear extinction. Effects related to fear extinction and anxiety where charged particle irradiation compromises the ability to disassociate adverse effects and outcomes. So it almost seems to me that radiation, is that what they're saying? That radiation seems to affect the brain, so you start seeing impending doom. You start seeing how all these bad things could potentially cause your extinction, and it makes you very stressful, probably gets the adrenals all going. So the inability to moderate reactions to certain unpleasant stimuli could elicit elevated stress, anxiety, and other disadvantageous responses in unexpected or emergency situations. So, guys, that's interesting. So fear is created by irradiating the brain. Is that what they're saying here? That really is what they're saying here. So it elevates your stress, anxiety, and other responses to unexpected or emergency situations. Well, with Fukushima having a triple meltdown right now, and us getting spewed upon on a daily basis for over five, going on 6 years now, if you can even believe it, with radiation. That's very interesting as they utilize that fear button. Fear, surprise, and alarm quite often. Very interesting. Just like the results from last year's experiments, the mice also had slower response times, were forgetful, and sometimes even appeared to be confused. Symptoms of the progression of chronic dementia. Sounds like Hillary Clinton. Brain scans taken 6 months after exposure also backed up these findings, revealing significant levels of brain inflammation and damage to the neurons. The researchers explained that the neural networks in the brain, in the mouse brains, were impaired through the reduction of structures called dendrites. Whoa. Now, we also found that dendrites consuming parts of the brain, they were saying, could be part of the reason for dementia as well. But anyways, impaired through reduction of structures called dendrites and spines in the neurons, which disrupt the transmission of signals among brain cells, and they link this physical damage to the increase in cognitive impairments displayed in mice after cosmic radiation exposure. What is perhaps even more concerning is the fact that the researchers think that the signs will not be so obvious in astronauts until about the six-month mark, which could be devastating for the prospects of our colonization of Mars. And of course, we should reiterate, though, that these effects have so far only been found in mouses. Don't worry about it. There is no guarantee that we will be able to replicate this in humans. But it wouldn't be such a surprise if something similar does befall the brave souls who volunteer to be the first manned spacecraft to the red planet. To be quite frank, says astronaut Tim Peake of his recent 6 month stay on the International Space Station, you feel pretty terrible. Can only be described as something akin to the world's worst hangover in terms of everything that is going on in your head. And Peak had the protection of Earth's magnetosphere that whole time in the space station, so imagine what it'll be like on Mars. It'll be a phenomenal achievement. If scientists can figure out how to get us to Mars in mere days, but knowing how to protect our colonies from long-term space exposure will be even more impressive. Well, got a couple things here. I had been going back and forth last week with Lonnie Clark, and I even think I might have mentioned this after that exchange. So I find, and I had seen some stuff about graphene that they were messing around with. We had talked at the beginning of last week how, I don't know, I raise an eyebrow about our original space program, and I'm not going to get into this here because we've kind of gotten way off the track from where I wanted to go right now, but go back and listen to last Monday or Tuesday's show, and you'll hear it all there as to what my reasoning is. But the only way back in the 60s that we really had to protect ourselves from radiation was lead, and lots of it, if you're talking about things such as gamma rays and other cosmic high energy radiation that's out there. And there's no way that you'd be able to launch a spaceship, especially in the 60s, with the amount of lead that would be needed to not cook inside of your space capsule once you left the magnetosphere. And we found that out, and I talked about this too, but I'm not going to post videos of these. You can go search for them. There were all kinds of research videos back from that time that Russia had released with monkeys and dogs and things and capsules, and they didn't turn out too well. So I believe that the same would be true for humans if they really, at that time, without proper protection, ventured outside of the magnetosphere. But there were some rumblings of maybe some graphene, super thin nano technology that would be able to create a radiation shield that might be able to go within walls. But then, I don't know, I saw some recent research, there might be some issues with that. But then, this is what caught me by the nose. CERN, Let's get back to CERN. Large Hadron Collider in Norway. Right as the day Obama is going to get his Peace Prize, CERN is creating the spaceship fields of the future. Giant superconducting magnets could protect astronauts from cosmic rays. Well, look at that. CERN isn't content with having the largest particle accelerator in the world. It has projects on its horizon, like protecting future space travelers from deadly cosmic radiation. Now, Houghton, did we know that CERN was working on the space program? I know I didn't. Cosmic rays, I mean, I knew they were working on trying to detect like muons and stuff and the God particles, but I never heard about them trying to develop some sort of like radiation shield for long distance space travel. Like, where did they pull that one out of? Cosmic rays are one of the gravest threats in space that agencies have to contend with for any future Mars exploration. And harsh is this environment full of radiation that's damaging to life like us. And yeah, we found out it causes brain swelling and dementia. And while it didn't prevent a short duration space flight like the Apollo mission to the moon, oh yeah, listen to that wink, sending humans beyond the Earth-Moon system will require us to do a lot more to protect them. But CERN thinks that it can make a Star Trek-like shield system a reality. To that end, scientists there are testing the use of magnesium diboride as superconducting magnets. And these magnets are used in the Large Hadron Collider to create an ultra-bright particle beam at low temperature. And used in spacecraft shielding, they would create a sort of magnetosphere around the craft, likely the Orion capsule, simulating one of the mechanisms that prevents radiation exposure on Earth and in the upper atmosphere. Now, how cool is that? Because we just talked about that last week. Creating an artificial magnetosphere around the spaceship as a solution to not getting irradiated to death. I just can't believe that they're involving CERN in this. The magnets would be coiled within the body of the craft and surrounding it with an artificial magnetic field. The MGB2 superconductor seems to be very well placed to take part in this challenging adventure. Among many of its advantages, there is also the ability to operate at higher temperatures, which is up to around 25 Kelvin, thus allowing the spacecraft to have simplified cryogenic systems, says CERN's communication editor Antonella De Rosso in a post on the idea. Hoping that they're right, because radiation isn't a danger only for traveling through space, Mars does not have a magnetosphere as strong as Earth to protect life forms on its surface from space radiation. So the advanced shielding technologies must be part of any survivable habitat on the surface of the red planet. Now, who would have thought that we'd be tying CERN into this whole thing? But I'm telling you, from the day of that spiral was some sort of weird-ass project. I don't exactly know what it is, but I have a feeling it has to do with some sort of space weaponization. Well, now we see what came out yesterday. And honestly, guys, I didn't know this was coming. We should have guessed it. But this is right after we got off the air yesterday. I saw this story. And actually, this one here is posted at 1 a.m. this morning. Obama announces that we are vowing to send people to Mars by the 2030s. U.S. President Barack Obama said that the United States will partner with private industry to send people to Mars by 2030, adding commercial interests to Washington's previously announced plan. Guys, we have established every bit of this. We have looked at Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, Boeing, Stephen Hawking, Mark Zuckerberg, and some Russian billionaire all getting into the picture. We also have the commercial moon mining coming as well. Obama writes in an essay that was posted on our propaganda network, CNN, which made me want to choke, quote, and they are like the Pravda propaganda arm for the United States right now, just pumping out the official narrative, Mr. Anderson Cooper. Quote, I am excited to announce that we are working with our commercial partners to build new habitats that can sustain and transport astronauts on long-duration missions into deep space, says Obama in his essay posted by CNN. These missions will teach us how humans can live far from Earth, something that we will need on our long journey to Mars. And Obama didn't specify which commercial companies will be involved in the effort, but of course SpaceX, headed by Elon Musk, is also planning on sending people to Mars in the coming years. SpaceX did not immediately respond to a request for comment, but we've read so many stories, they are all working together on this already. He's utilizing and leasing NASA spaceports, and they're trading information, and they're doing that not only with SpaceX, but they're doing that with Boeing. They're doing that with the billionaire that's running the mining company. I can't find the story right now. It's up here somewhere. That's going to go to the moon. They're utilizing some of the Kennedy Space Station. The issue of getting enough food and water into space to feed astronauts on a month or years-long mission in deep space has been a key logistical problem. A little research now has been done to show how this might work. Ever since taking office 8 years ago, winko, and getting his Peace Prize in Norway, Obama said that the United States wants to send people to the red planet, Earth's nearest neighbor, by the 2030s. NASA is developing a powerful rocket known as the Space Launch System and a deep space capsule called Orion for this purpose. The first launch of the Space Launch System with no people on board is already planned for 2018, and a U.S. mission to send humans into an area of space beyond the moon, but not as far as Mars, is planned for 2020. Well, guys, there are going to be two space agencies that are going to attempt a historic landing on Mars next week, a week from today at 10:48 Eastern time in the morning. Mark your calendars. The European Space Agency has teamed up with Russia's Roscosmos program to land a spacecraft on Mars on Wednesday, October 19th. And if they stick the landing, they'll be joining NASA as the only space agencies in history to successfully land a spacecraft on Mars, minus the failed Mars 3's probe. Now guys, we have a new space race that started, and it's not about Mars. It's about the weaponization of space. But getting out to the heavenly bodies to go exploit some of these newly found riches is always a good way to prompt investment into these technologies. But I don't think it's about saving humanity, and that's the way they're trying to sell it to us. But it's not about moving us to a new heavenly body to make certain that all the horrors we've created on this planet are exacerbated. That all the horrors on this planet are stopped, or we stop our extinction by getting people off this rock. And that will only be the beginning. And again, that's what I keep saying about this. Like, we're in the land of insanity now, and every day gets more insane than yesterday. And it's just the beginning. This is just the beginning of the lunacy. This is just the beginning of putting your toe into the sci-fi world that used to be totally separated. It was in the movies over there. And now it's becoming a reality. The lander will then start a whole new quest to search for signs of life on the red planet. So I guess that's That's what Russia and the EU are going to work on. See if we have any rock-eating microbes like we heard referenced in an article yesterday. Still didn't look at that. If this landing is a success, you will actually see the agencies put one spacecraft up into Mars' atmosphere and one onto its surface, giving scientists a rare opportunity to record conditions above and below the planet simultaneously. Now, I told you that we already had something like that. The United States was using that to map all of the minerals and the elements that are on Mars, and that was back a couple years ago. They had already done that. To plan this, on October 16th, the joint Russian-European ExoMars spacecraft will break off into two bits, the Trace Gas Orbiter and the Schiaparelli Lander, and the orbiter has an easy job. It just gets to fly off into Mars orbit, and the Schiaparelli Lander, on the other hand, has 3 days to prepare for a perfect landing. That involves using an onboard radar to measure Schiaparelli's height above the surface, and then kicking in his landing apparatus at about 2 meters above the surface. And I don't really care about how it's going to land. It means mission control will have no power over the landing. It's all going to be executed by a computer on board the spacecraft, which will make for a seriously nail-biting final shutdown between Schiaparelli and the cold, hard surface of Mars next Wednesday. This entire sequence is pre-programmed, and the Schiaparelli only has one shot, says Gizmodo. There are no overdoers should anything go wrong, and that means if the lander gets the angles even slightly wrong, it will either start to freefall too fast or to burn up in Mars' atmosphere, and then it bounces off back into space. What's cool is that this landing is going to be taking place right now, 1 week from today. And they're going to be broadcasting it live. I saw ScienceAlert.com. It said, check back on our Facebook page and we'll have a live feed. So we might have to see if we can catch that. The ExoMars mission is split into two parts. The first is next week's historic landing, hopefully. And the second is scheduled for 2020 when a Roscosmos-built lander called the ExoMars 2020 Surface Platform will deliver the ESA-built ExoMars rover to the Martian surface. Now, what's weird is that they didn't mention India in here anywhere, and India has sent up a probe. And I don't know if India's actually landed on the surface or if it was in orbit, but that was a year or so ago. India Mars. Let's take a look really quick while we're on the topic. India's first Mars mission in pictures, yes, on October 28, 2013, so almost 3 years ago. Here, let's take a look at this. I think there are images from space, so it must be some sort of satellite. Yeah, it's probe. India's first ever Mars probe is now 1 year into its historic mission and still going strong. And this was 2015, September 2016, so it must be 2 years now. The Mars Orbiter Mission spacecraft, also known as the Mangalina, arrived at the Red Planet on the night of September 23rd, 2014, just 2 days after NASA's Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution Probe reached Mars orbit. Mangala, which means Mars craft in Sanskrit, it was the first interplanetary probe ever launched by India. And I saw pictures of the control room and all them celebrating, and it was really amusing because it had a whole room full of women in saris working in their space program. I was like, hey, all the more power to ya. But the $73 million mission is primarily a technological demonstration, and officials with the Indian Space Research Organization have said. But it carries a color camera for scientific instruments, which has been used to study the Mars surface and atmosphere over the last 12 months. And to celebrate its anniversary, it's compiled some of the best images. They've sent them back to Earth, and now the orbiter will seek to determine how fast Mars' atmosphere is being lost to space. And they are not only operational spacecraft orbiting the red planet, NASA's Mars Odyssey and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiters are also eyeing the planet from above. See, I bet you those are the ones that are mapping the planet, as is the European Space Agency's Mars Access Probe. And these last three spacecraft arrived on Mars in Mars 2001, 2006, and 2003, respectively. So it's been going on for a while, guys. Two NASA rovers are also actively exploring the Martian surface, which are Opportunity and Curiosity, still out there, which have survived since August 2012. So what do we say to this? So we have famine and war and unbridled pollution in our water, starving people, jobs all going to robots. Things going out in the handbasket here. And we got the whole world now shooting for Mars. We got even not only the rich tech billionaires, but I see this story yesterday. This came out of Claire Bernish's publication. Leonardo DiCaprio wants Elon Musk to take him to Mars. Remember, we found out yesterday, Elon Musk says he wants to make this within reach for anyone who really wants to go to Mars. It's going to be the cost of an average U.S. house, $200,000 to go to Mars. So don't worry about it. You don't have to buy your little McMansion. If you got some of those tendencies to really love nail biting and always wanted a sense of adventure, now you too can go. SpaceX has been in the limelight recently for a number of reasons, a mixed bag of events, which has made Elon Musk's rocket company the subject of casual gossip and deep philosophical introspection. But despite Musk's recent mishaps, they had a couple explosions, with a Falcon 9 recyclable rocket, he, along with other aerospace bigwigs like Boeing, has been promoting the colonization of Mars and sharing Musk's vision to travel and even live on Mars is an unlikely public figure, Leonardo DiCaprio, the best known for his role in Titanic, who cares, blah, blah, blah. Perhaps it is his concern for this planet that DiCaprio plans a trip to another planet. DiCaprio told President Obama at the South by South Lawn event that he planned to travel to Mars with Musk on his space program. Musk has long testified that he believes that the red planet should be colonized. And now is the first time in history of Earth that that window is open where it is possible for us to extend life to another planet. Musk has been intent on making humankind a multi-planet species since 2002 when he first founded SpaceX, and he believes that new technological advances such as reusable rockets and the ability to produce rocket propellants from Mars are key. So I don't know. So what are we going to have all these rich movie stars now jump on the bandwagon and get all the stupid people who really think that this is going to be like so exciting, go up there and have little microbes get in their ears and eat their brains, as well as the cosmic radiation. I don't know, guys. I would say we'd be better off sticking it out on this rock. So, where are we going to end this up? I really want to get off this soon. This isn't a space show, but it's pretty interesting. There's just so much insanity going on right now. And China's plummeting space station has revealed a big problem with its space program. You know, a couple years back, we had all these telescopes and space stations, and it was like one every month for 3 or 4 months. Dropping out of the sky and having to worry about falling large pieces of heat-tempered mirrors and things and lenses from telescopes, if you remember that. Well, now we have some big Chinese space station, because, of course, China's still trying to get into the space race as well, that apparently is getting ready to come down, and it's going to be next year, late 2017. China's plummeting space station has revealed a big problem with its space program. China launched the second vehicle in its Tiangong, which means Heavenly Palace program, to construct a space station in early September. And despite the success of the launch, the announcement was overshadowed by an acknowledgement that the prototype module, the Tiangong 1, which was always due to be replaced, is now out of control. Got to worry about that. And will almost certainly crash back down to Earth in late 2017. Just what we need. Falling, burning space debris from a Chinese space station. The Chinese Space Agency revealed its plans to build a space station in 2007. Since then, it's made great progress toward achieving its goal. The Tiangong 1 was unmanned, but it was involved in three separate docking events with the Shenzhou transport vessel. Shenzhou 9 and 10 carried the first and the second Chinese female astronauts, and Tiangong 1 operated for its full two-year lifespan. The original program suggested that it would go through a planned deorbiting prior to a controlled Earth reentry, and the operation was extended for a further 2 years, and there were no additional trips to the spaceship and no news of what its purpose of extending its life was apart from testing its spaceworthiness. But in March of 2016, the Chinese Space Agency announced that Tiangong had come to the end of its life, and also they revealed they lost communications with its satellite. And in mid-September, the Chinese manned space engineering office confirmed that they are no longer able to control the satellite's orbit. Uh-oh. Well, it came as no surprise to those working with satellites. All spacecrafts around Earth are tracked both by governments and enthusiasts among the public, and it has been clear for a while now that Tiangong 1 was not following its planned trajectory. So look out, guys. We're going to have an entire space station raining down over us. All right, have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.
On the Tracks, you can catch every Monday night and